first time I saw thresher sharks in Malapascua in central Philippines, the visibility wasn't even good. I just remember going down with my brother and then seeing the shape of a thresher shark. And thresher sharks have a very distinct and unique shape with their long tail. And I know this sounds so cheesy, but in my heart of hearts, I was like, oh my God, I belong here. They're my people. They're my, I just felt a sense of connection with the shark. And since maybe 2009, I've been working on shark conservation. But that moment made me feel like, okay, I need to move here. I need to move here and I need to do something to work on protecting these sharks.
Hey, I'm Danny Washington, and welcome to 21st Century Mermaids. As a dedicated ocean advocate, STEM educator, and avid underwater adventurer, I consider myself a modern-day mermaid. This podcast is called 21st Century Mermaids because it shares stories of women all over the world who are working to explore, understand, and protect ocean ecosystems using science, technology, storytelling, determination, and a bit of style. Guests we feature are actively welcome the United Nations Decade of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development and addressing the UN's 2019 theme for World Oceans Day, which is gender and the ocean. We consider the brilliant ocean warriors we interview on this podcast to be the epitome of what it means to be a modern mermaid. Intelligent, talented, intriguing, and fierce. These soulful sirens are using their talents and skill sets to turn the tide toward a healthier relationship between humanity and our big blue planet. Well, welcome to 21st Century Mermaids podcast. It's a pleasure to be here, and I happen to be with a great friend and someone that I met on the other side of the world for the first time a few years ago, and it's super serendipitous that we're sharing space right now, and I'm really excited to have this conversation. Welcome, Anna Oposa, all the way from the Philippines. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so nice to see you, Danny.
It's great to see you too. And for those of you listening, we're able to watch each other and video chat with each other while having this conversation. That makes it so much better, especially during COVID times where we can connect and see each other's faces. So let's start from the beginning, Anna. When did we first meet? I'd love to hear your take on the story and then I'll chime in.
We met in Brunei in 2018. We were both invited to be keynote speakers for an event that was focused on sustainable development goal number 14, which is, of course, as we know, life below water. And that's how we first met.
Yes, it was an exciting trip. And I was pleasantly surprised. And I had a great time. I think you had a great time as well.
Yeah, of course. And we spent the whole weekend together.
Yes.
Going out, of course, preparing for our presentations and just talking about our shared love for the ocean.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And then the big moment was when we had the chance to present in front of the students, as well as the princess of Brunei.
Oh my God. Yeah, I almost forgot about that. Yes. And there was this protocol and how we would like go up on stage. And yeah, it was crazy.
It was a whole to do, but it was beautiful. Yeah. And a really unique experience that I'll never forget. That's for sure. But I was so happy to have the chance to get to know you on a personal level and spend, like you said, that weekend together exploring Brunei. And what I realized is that, you know, a lot of us in this conservation, specifically ocean conservation space, a lot of us, I think, are living parallel lives in so many ways in different parts of the planet. And I definitely felt that with you. My connection to the Philippines kind of runs way back. I had friends that were from there, and I feel like I'd been introduced to Filipino culture. But of course, nothing compares to being there. And so I think as my first question, I'd love to know from your perspective, what has it been like serving as a leader in ocean conservation in the Philippines? And perhaps what is your biggest triumph to this day? And maybe one of your biggest challenges that you've experienced?
Big question.
It is. It's a three-part question just for you.
Big question. So first, what is it like to be an ocean leader in the Philippines? So just for people who have never been here or are not familiar with the country, it's the second largest archipelago in the world, which means we're completely made up of islands. We have more than 7,000 islands. So we're completely surrounded by water. What's strange to me is that we don't have the same kind of connection to the ocean like the Pacific Islands. So I've worked in other Pacific Islands, and they feel so much more connected and so much more part of their culture. And here, a lot of people are afraid to be in the ocean, which is scandalous for me, because there are a lot of fear surrounding it. There's also this, you know, some people will say, like, don't go out to the sea because you're going to get dark. And if you're dark, boys won't like you. I mean, there's another layer of that. So what we're trying to do in our work in Safe Philippine Seas is really bring people to the ocean, at least pre-COVID, but also have that appreciation and connection with the sea. What has been my biggest triumph so far? I think it is changing the way people perceive the ocean and what they can do for the ocean. Safe Philippine Seas is all about empowerment. And when I don't use that word lightly. What I mean when I say empowerment is that people know what to do and people have the skills and opportunities to take action when they know that there's an issue. What are the challenges? There are a lot. I will never run out of challenges. There's the government bureaucracy. I like to call it bureaucracy because I remember before we had to take kids in a public school out swimming. And we needed 14 levels of approval. Just like, I understand that it was for the safety, but it was just like, it's the local government and then the school and then the regional and then the national. And it was just insane.
Wow.
So that it requires a lot of patience to work with all of these steps. And then the other part of it is also dealing with like political anxiety and burnout. And that's the more personal side of it.
Mm. Oh, wow. Yeah. There are a lot of parallels to here. We still have quite a bit of bureaucracy here in the US as well. And yeah, I think it takes a lot of fortitude and perseverance to get through those challenges, especially working with children. So speaking of children, what was your childhood like? And when was the first moment that you met the ocean?
I don't remember my first encounter with the ocean. So my dad is an environmental lawyer, and all my life, I've been going with him to different projects, from like marine protected areas to reforestation projects. So there's no one moment where I remember, oh, this is my first time in the sea. I feel like it's always been part of my childhood. At 15 years old, my dad insisted that I become a scuba diver because he said that you don't know the true beauty of the Philippines unless you become a scuba diver and you see what's underwater. So my three brothers and I are all divers. And the sea has always been a big part of my life. We always go to the beach, especially during the summer.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And so when you were certified as a diver at 15, what was that dive that changed the way that you looked at the ocean and made you want to go back and continue going back?
When I became a scuba diver, to me, it was like a chore because my background is in theater, in the arts, and all my summers were spent in theater workshops. So to me, I felt like I was forced to be a scuba diver. I know it sounds ridiculous now. But I enjoyed it. I remember going in the water and, as you know, the cliche of it's a whole new world, seeing the fish near you, seeing the corals near you. It was exciting and I enjoyed it. And I remember my dad said, I won't buy you your own scuba diving gear because everyone gets tired of this. Your brothers don't dive anymore. And here I am. I'm the only one who dives consistently in my family many, many years later.
I love that. Yeah, when you least expect it, you could see habits and hobbies kind of follow you into your journey, and that's exciting. So your organization, Save Philippine Seas, what inspired you to create it?
When I was in college, I majored in English studies. And as I said, I was doing a lot of theater and performing because I had no intention of ever getting into environmental conservation. I felt like it was my dad's thing. And I don't want to be always associated as his daughter because he's quite accomplished and quite well known. But your upbringing catches up on you, like you said earlier. And I was volunteering for his NGO and I organized a few coastal cleanups in college. And I was so shocked at how much trash there was underwater. I remember attending and volunteering for one coastal cleanup and thinking, wow, we've really turned our ocean into a trash can. But after college, I submitted my thesis. I was looking for a quote-unquote real job. And there was a news article that had the headline, "Coral Reefs Twice the Size of Manila Destroyed." And it was a massive illegal wildlife trade case. And because I had so much time on my hands trying to look for a job, I found other people online and we started a hashtag SaveBHCs. And we started a Facebook page, Save Philippine Seas. And that became the response to the illegal wildlife trade case. It was really meant to be a temporary campaign, but it ended up becoming an NGO. And I guess my life's work. So there was no clear path at that time.
Wow, that's beautiful. I mean, I love it when that happens, when you see something that you just start on a whim because you're reacting to what you observe or what's happening in your community and you want to do something about it and you make it happen. That to me is a testament to the way that a lot of, I think, women in general work. I think that we're, for the most part, very focused on getting things done and making sure that our families, our communities benefit from that action. And I think one of the biggest aspects of that, especially when it comes to ocean conservation, is empathy and ocean literacy and giving people around us an opportunity to connect with the ocean in a real way. And so through your work at your NGO, how have you been able to do that with folks who interact with you?
I was reflecting on empathy a few days ago, and I was thinking how my theater background really helped me develop empathy. Because when you prepare for a role, you have to think about the backstory of that character. You have to think in that character's shoes. You have to understand how that character reacts to the other characters that are on stage. And then there's the offstage part of working in a huge production. And that experience was really formative for me. Now I can go into a room with people who will not usually sit at the same side of the table. So for example, a multinational corporation and a like leftist NGO. I always joke that I'm like Switzerland. So I can sit and listen. And one quality that I have and I'm very specific about is that I listen to listen and not to win. As an advocate, we sometimes think that we have to enter the room with our minds made up and advocate for what we want or the outcome that we want. And yes, that's true for some specific situations, but a lot of the work that I do is about listening and finding the best solution for that specific context. And it takes a lot of empathy and listening and patience to be able to do that. So now I work on policies, I work on education programs, I work on strategies for different kinds of stakeholders from communities, national governments, local governments, companies. And having that kind of experience of working with different sectors, I think it's slower, yes, but to me, it's what I see the gap is and where I am best at.
I love that. And the art of listening is one of the most powerful tools that you could ever use in any situation, really. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, what have you used to help cultivate that skill set of listening and having empathy?
I don't go to any room with my mind made up, especially now where politics can be so polarizing all over the world and in the Philippines. I never listen to react. Does that make sense? Like, if I know someone has this political view, I'm not going to force my political view on them, but instead try to understand why their thought process is the way it is. And I just listen and I don't try to push. Beliefs are so sensitive and so individualistic. So it's just about listening I have a very transparent face, but I try to be very neutral and then try to listen to and see how their views can align with the others. And what I've learned is that a lot of us want the same things. We just have very different ways of approaching it. An NGO and a company don't want polluted oceans. A company doesn't want to have their packaging being photographed on the beach. It's bad for their reputation. And an NGO also obviously advocates for like clean waters and healthy oceans and healthy communities. but our approach is just very different. So then how do we make them listen to each other and work together, if possible?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like I said before, this is a skill set that has to be developed, I think. And if more people paid attention to how they listen, I know that we would be able to avoid a lot of arguments, a lot of disconnection, giving each other space and time to talk about our motivating factors. So on this podcast, we like to feature women who are championing access, agency, and equity for women and our allies in ocean conservation. But as we know, as women in this space, there are lots of hurdles that women specifically have to jump over. So what are some of those hurdles that you've experienced in your career?
One is that I travel alone, or I used to travel alone a lot for field work, and I present by myself, which is not very common. In the Philippines, we still have this idea that women should be mothers and should be the primary caregivers and should stay at home. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that I have chosen a different life or a different path. And I have this distinct memory of presenting a marine protected area, like plan for a local government. And poured my heart out in this presentation. And after that, I said, does anyone have any questions? And the first question that a legislator, a local policymaker asked me was, are you single?
Oh my gosh.
And they were elbowing each other and being like, does your boyfriend know that you're here? Does your boyfriend, why did your boyfriend allow you to like do this by yourself? And I was thinking, if I were a man, I would never get asked those questions.
Never.
Never. And when I do work with my male teammates, they never get asked about their personal lives. They never get asked if they have their in relationships and where their kids are and who's taking care of their kids while they're gone. So that to me was I was quite upset, but I was also so young and I couldn't react properly. Now I would say something like, you know, that has nothing to do with the work that I'm doing. Can we like change topic? But I was just so shocked at that time. I was 23, so I didn't know any better on how to like call it out and say that it's not okay. So that's been a barrier. Well, I wouldn't say a barrier, but it's just been trying to change the way people think about that has been challenging and sometimes frustrating.
Yes, fulfilling those traditional roles that women are in a lot of cultures are assumed to play, right? And like you said, it's not a bad thing. It's just that we are multidimensional, multifaceted human beings who are capable of many things. And we can do both. We can do as much as we want or as little as we want. That's just a choice.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel you. I've definitely experienced something similar in front of people. And in those situations, you're like, I have an audience and I'm trying to maintain my professional composure, but you guys are testing me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, yes. So your role at Save Philippine Seas is, I love it. It's my favorite title in the world. It's Chief Mermaid.
And yes,
it's the best title. And of course, every woman that we, feature here on this podcast, we consider to be mermaids as well. But I want to know, what is your idea of a mermaid? Like, is it a lifestyle? Is it a drawing? I don't know. I think a lot of people have different interpretations, yeah. But I would love to hear yours.
Every Women's Month, so that's every March, Save Philippine Seas, we publish this mermaid manifesto, and there are certain rules for us to be mermaids. So one is support your sisters. So we obviously love all our puns if you visit our social media, but support your sisters, meaning you lift other women up. And our tagline there is crab mentality. Crabs are our friends, but crab mentality is not. I don't know if people are familiar with crab mentality, but it's like pulling each other down. So we don't like that. So it's always like lifting other women up. Another one is self-care isn't shellfish. This is something that we need to be talking about more, especially women who are leading movements and organizations or even participating in them. We have to disconnect to connect with ourselves and our purpose. And I think the last one that we always post is that mermaids take care of their homes because it's the only one we have. And taking care of the ocean is the core of being a mermaid. We have to watch out for our home because it's the only one we have. And also because it takes care of us. And we forget that it takes care of us. Those are some of the rules that we have for being a mermaid.
That's phenomenal. Yes, the Mermaid Manifesto. And so we got to make sure we feature that when the next one comes out. When did you say it usually comes out each year?
Every March. Every Women's March. Month.
Okay, for Women's Month. Yeah. Got it. Oh, yeah, definitely. We want to share that out. Again, I want to go back to stories about you in the ocean, interacting with the ocean. Have you had a particular encounter or a specific experience that you think was a game changer for you, where you just felt completely in flow and it was a moment with the ocean that, you know was uniquely for you?
The first time I saw thresher sharks in Malapascua in central Philippines, I remember the visibility wasn't even good. I just remember going down with my brother and then seeing the shape of a thresher shark. And thresher sharks have a very distinct and unique shape with their long tail. And I know this sounds so cheesy, but in my heart of hearts, I was like, oh my God, I belong here. They're my people. I just felt a sense of connection with the shark. And I've always, since maybe 2009, I've been working on shark conservation. But that moment made me feel like, okay, I need to move here. I need to move here and I need to do something to work on protecting these sharks. And so a few years later, I actually did move there. That's how game-changing it was for me. I moved there and I spent the last, I would say, 10 years dedicated to protecting not just thresher sharks, but sharks in general. So since then, I've worked on a national policy to protect sharks in the Philippines. We have turned that area into a shark sanctuary and established a marine protected area network to make sure that where the sharks go, they are continued to be protected. So that if you need a game-changing moment, then that's the one. That's the one. And moving there also made me work with the different stakeholders. So it's not just the shark itself. A lot of people think that conservation is about the shark itself, but it's really about the people that benefit from the species or the marine resources. So I worked with teachers, law enforcers, governments, dive guides, dive operators, any stakeholder you can imagine that's affected by the presence of the sharks there because of the tourism industry that's there.
That's phenomenal. I mean, to help establish a marine protected area is a huge, huge win. I personally will want to say thank you, first of all, for that, because this is what we need, right? And in the next 10 years, actually less than that, 9 years, we've got this window of opportunity to protect 30% of the ocean by 2030. And this is a collective goal established by the United Nations Decade of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development. But as you said about stakeholders, it requires everybody to get involved. And whoever benefits or uses that part of the ocean, they should be a part of that decision. What other types of solutions do you kind of foresee or you have insight into that you've seen really works in helping establish MPAs?
Definitely education that leads to empowerment. I've always been interested in environmental education because that's a big gap in the Philippines specifically. Well, all over the world, I would say, but in the Philippines, it's just so strange, like I said earlier, that we are an archipelago and yet we don't talk about the ocean as much as we should be, knowing that our lives depend on it. And the kind of environmental education that we develop or that we promote in Save Philippine Seas is one that empowers young people, especially. Our main target is youth, because I don't want to say that youth are leaders of the future. I strongly believe that they're leaders of today if they are given the right opportunities and the right skills to lead. So in every Save Philippine Seas project, we always have like micro grants. So that's $300 to, let's say, $500 to now we've raised it to $10,000, depending on the type of program. But it's for them to have resources to implement their own projects in their communities and to be able to spark that appreciation on why we need to care for the ocean is such an important step that we tend to gloss over. A lot of us go straight to the policy or straight to the plan or straight to the GPS points of the marine protected area, but we don't talk enough about why we need to protect this area, what benefits it gives us, not just short-term benefits, but long-term benefits, what the economic benefits are. These are topics that we need to talk about in a language that people respond to and yes. not just scientists talking to each other or policymakers talking to each other.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Education is key. It's everything. It allows us to create tools for everyday people to be able to access information in a way that makes sense. And I think that's essential. And you can't, there's no blanket way to do that. You have to look at each individual community and figure out the nuances and those connections. And it's vitally important. So I'm also curious about your take on blue carbon and, you know, the Philippines being in a tropical setting. I know that there's seagrass beds as well as mangrove forests available there. Have you seen any cool projects lately, or is your NGO working on anything related to blue carbon?
We don't work on blue carbon specifically, but I do think that it's a topic that needs to be explored further. There are a lot of questions on how we calculate this, how much we need to plant, like how many mangroves we need to plant to be able to do this. But it's more and more people are getting interested in it. We've received a lot of inquiries if we do mangrove planting for blue carbon. So it's not something we've pursued specifically, but definitely something. And we refer them to organizations that work on mangroves because it's not our specialization.
Got it. Okay, cool. Very cool. Just for fun, describe a day in the life of Anna Oposa, Chief Mermaid. What are you doing during the day?
I feel like my life was more exciting pre-pandemic when I was always traveling, going to field work. But now I've adjusted. It's a very different life. I'm sure you feel the same way. Before, I would be traveling to, yes. you know, 2 to 3 weeks a month. And then COVID has made me stay put. And there have been some benefits to this. But what a day looks like for me is I wake up in the morning at around 6 a.m. And then I do my workout. Working out is very important to me. It's like my form of meditation and self-care. And walk my dog. Another pandemic-related opportunity that came. And then I work the whole day. And now work looks like a lot of online programs, a lot of online events. And still, at the core of the work that I do, it's still the same. It's still empowering communities, empowering people. It just looks very different because it's all online. I still do a lot of policy work, mostly on sharks and plastics and raising funds. There's also the non-fun admin side of running an NGO, which is the fundraising and the grant writing and the report writing. So today I'll be working on like completion reports and some communications plans. So there's no day that is alike, which I like, which works for me. And we always have multiple projects running at the same time, which keeps me motivated and excited.
Awesome. Awesome. That's so good. Yeah. And running an NGO is particularly difficult some days just because of all the paperwork yeah. and all the like, you know, admin yeah. that's required, but it's totally yeah. worth it. And when you see those results come out and the people that you get to meet and work with, I at least feel that way about, you know, some of the work that I do with nonprofits. But yeah, I mean, there's space for everybody, right? To figure out how they can contribute to this bigger mission of protecting our ocean. And I just can't commend you enough, Anna, for the work that you've done in your career and how you've been shining a light all over the world, really, and bringing more attention to the Philippines and all the wonderful things that your beautiful island nation has to offer. And
thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And so I think we'll end with just a quick like vision of what you hope a healthy ocean will look like after 2030. What do you see?
What I see and the vision I'm working towards is for every person in the world to be a citizen. We call our followers citizens because we want to remind everyone that all of us, regardless of where we live and what we do, we are connected to the ocean. The ocean depends on us and we depend on the ocean. So I want a globe full of citizens.
I love it. I love it. I'm a citizen, right?
Definitely. Prime VIP citizen.
Hey. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Anna. It is an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. And before we go, tell everybody where we can find you. How do they connect with you?
I am on Twitter and Instagram at Anna Oposa. That's A-N-N-A-O-P-O-S-A. And you can also find us at Safe BHCs. and on Facebook, Save Philippines. See you online.
See you online. All right, bye.
21st Century Mermaids is a podcast created and executive produced by me, Danny Washington, Erica Woolsey, and Maria Soleil Bianco. Our editor and sound designer is Vagabond Podcast Productions. This podcast is supported by the Baum Foundation. Thanks for listening, and catch you later, mermaids.